Attention.
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 Rosetta Stone invites you to be a part of its biggest language learning event in history. Because in 2011, we want to help 3 million people learn a new language. That's why we're going to give you an absolutely free demo of our language immersion technology. Call 1-800-522-1164. Developed to fully immerse you in your new language, the Rosetta Stone solution is easier than ever before. For your free demo, call 1-800-522-1164. 1-800-522-1164.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Well, happy St. Patrick's Day to all within the franchise community, and a special happy St. Patrick's Day to all the folks with some Irish blood in them. Well, as I stated last week, it is an exciting time in franchising, and specifically on Franchise Today. Last week, my guests were Brad and Sherry Fishman. And if you've yet to listen to their segment on Franchise Today, do so today by listening on demand at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. I believe you'll find it both enjoyable and informative as Brad and Sherry share their insight and experience about the IFA, the IFA convention, and the recent Franchise Unconference. And on a lighter side, you'll listen to Brad admit that Sherry, his wife, is actually smarter than he is. And, of course, that's now on the podcast of the show, so that statement lives forever. Actually, Brad and Sherry shared some great thoughts on how they work so closely together as both husband and wife and as business partners. And all kidding aside, I highly recommend listening to the show on demand. There's a great deal of excitement brewing as the second annual Franchise Legal Series on Franchise Today starts on April 14th. And due to popular demand, the series has been expanded from 4 segments in 2010 to 7 segments in 2011. And the series will run on consecutive Thursdays from April 14th all the way through May 26th. And will feature discussions with leading franchise industry legal experts. Now check this out. April 14th, Lane Fisher will be on. He'll be talking about earnings claims and financial performance representations. The following week, April 21st, we'll have Jonathan Redgrave, who'll be discussing social media and e-discovery legal issues. Then on April 28th, Lee Plave will be my guest, as we talk about franchisor, franchisee, contemporary social media issues. The following week is none other than Warren Lee Lewis, the author of the Franchise Sales book, and we'll be discussing franchise sales best practices. And the following week, another representative from Clay Cook, Leslie Curran, will be my guest as we discuss franchise broker issues in a digital world. The following week, as a IFA Legal Symposium recap, Adel Siegelheim will be my guest, and he'll be giving us a rundown of everything that occurred during the IFA Legal Symposium in Washington. And May 26th, we'll wrap up the show with franchisee attorney Michael Webster, who's involved with the Independent Association of Franchise and Dealers, and we'll be discussing independent franchisee associations and why franchisors should love them. And the legal series is actually a precursor, as I said, to the upcoming IFA Annual Legal Symposium, which, as we know, is being held in Washington May 15th through the 17th at the JW Marriott. And the legal series on Franchise Today is the brainchild of co-producer Joe Caruso, and Joe and I seek to expand upon the issues to be discussed at the legal symposium. Ultimately, our objective is to expose those not able to attend the IFA event to similar issues presented by some of the leading legal professionals in the franchise industry. So mark the calendar, April 14th, and then every Thursday thereafter, right up into the Memorial Day weekend. Now, here's an IFA milestone. Congratulations to the IFA's Paul Rocchio, celebrating his 12th year at the IFA. Thanks for all your hard work, Paul. It certainly is appreciated by many and all of us within the franchise community. Well, the IFA annual convention has ended, but energy, ideas, and information exchange and networking that are great ways to build the future of franchising remain. So use the IFA's convention tools and resources, the video and photo highlights, as well as a library of audio and PowerPoint presentations, to tap into proven business building solutions and to recall memorable activities. And you may do so at the IFA site at franchise.org. And, of course, be sure to plan ahead, as the 2012 IFA convention will be next February 11th to the 14th in Orlando, Florida. And did you know the IFA's Franchise Opportunity Seminar for Women, Minorities, and Veterans are coming to a city near you beginning in April? Partnering with local organizations and government agencies, the seminars are designed to bring more minorities into franchising. There's no cost to IFA members to participate. The first seminars are scheduled for April 22nd in Prince George's County, Maryland, and April 30th in Baltimore. And they'll continue throughout the year. For details, email IFA Director of Education and Diversity, Miriam Brewer, or better yet, call her direct at 202-662-0784. Here's some more IFA events. Strategies to effectively manage compliance, franchise sales, and development challenges will be shared during the IFA's Legal Roundtable Series and Franchise Development Seminar Series. And the Legal Roundtable Series will be conducted in Denver on April 15th, in Minneapolis on September 23rd, and then in L.A. on November 4th. And the Development Series is set for Denver on April 14th. Minneapolis on September 22nd, and the IFA will host its Franchise Development Super Session on November 2nd and 3rd in conjunction with the West Coast Franchise Expo, November 4th through 6th in L.A. And, of course, as I mentioned a little while ago, don't forget the upcoming International Franchise Expo in Washington, April 1st through April 3rd. The event is held at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center. For more details, please check the IFE website at ifeinfo.com. And continuing with more IFA happenings, next week on Franchise Today, I'll be joined by none other than Jack Earl, the incoming or the currently new IFA chairman, and that's next week right here on Franchise Today. And, you know, it's certainly exciting. You know, wow, Jack Earl next week, IFA CEO, president, and Steve Caldera on a couple of weeks ago. And actually, my interview with Steve will be rebroadcast again on March 31st, as many franchise professionals, including myself, will be converging on Washington for the IFA. Anyway, Jack and Steve are a great 1-2 punch for Franchise Today. But today we get to make it a triple play, as my guest is Doc Cohen. Doc and I will be discussing his perspective on the state of franchising, his experience with the IFA, and his insight into the trials and tribulations of multi-unit ownership and the role of technology in today's franchise environment. But before we do so, I'm honored to share the following from the IFA. Former International Franchise Association Chairman Lawrence Doc Cohen, founder and former CEO of Devlin Corporation and founder and CEO of Cookie Associates, a leading franchisee of the Great American Cookie Company, was named to the IFA Hall of Fame during the association's 51st annual convention recently conducted in Las Vegas. Now, the Hall of Fame Award is the oldest and most prestigious award conferred by the IFA, and is presented to an IFA member who exemplifies the optimum in franchising, has made significant contributions to the advancement of franchising and the franchising community. IFA outgoing chairman Ken Walker said, Doc Cohen has worked tirelessly to move the franchise industry forward and to ensure that the IFA is an organization that benefits the entire community. His extensive contribution to the franchise community and to the IFA makes him the ideal recipient of the IFA Hall of Fame. Now, in addition to serving as IFA chairman in 2006, Doc has served as a trustee for the IFA Educational Foundation and on many IFA committees, including Franchise Relations, Awards, Long-Range Planning, and Convention. And he served 5 years as treasurer of the IFA, has chaired the IFA Convention Planning Committee and FRANPAC, IFA's Political Action Committee, Most recently, he chaired the Multi-Unit Franchisee Development Conference Task Force to design and implement the IFA, the first IFA conference dedicated to multi-unit franchise owners. And he's the second franchisee in history to assume the position of chairman of the IFA and was the first franchisee to earn the designation of CFE. That's the Certified Franchise Executive designation given by the IFA Educational Foundation. Doc, congratulations on the award and welcome to Franchise Today.
Paul, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be on your show.
Well, I am definitely honored to have you, and I guess we'll jump right into it. And I have to ask you, you know, what were your thoughts? What were you thinking when you first learned you were being named to the IFA Hall of Fame?
Well, it was quite overwhelming, to tell you the truth. It was something that I had never dreamed that could happen. And, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is, oh, my goodness, am I really worthy of having my name up there with the others whose names have come before me? And it's very humbling.
Well, I think they definitely picked the right individual this year, and I'm glad to know you and thank you for all that you've done for franchising, because it has been quite a bit, as the IFA press release stated. You know, how important is it that franchise professionals be involved with the IFA?
Well, you know, the IFA is, we say, the one voice of franchising, and it's the only place where you get the three components of the franchise industry together. You've got franchisors, the franchisees, and the suppliers. There's nowhere else that you can go that brings those three elements together. And not being involved is tantamount to saying, I don't really care about franchising. I think in order to help promote and protect the interests of franchising as a way of doing business, it is critical to be a part of the IFA. The IFA represents all of us who are in franchising in so many ways, and not just in public policy areas, but it provides so much education and information for people who are just starting out. And I think that is a critical part of what IFA does, is it helps mentor those who are looking at or just beginning to get into franchising as a way of doing business.
And what would you say to a lot of the newcomers, the upstart franchisors that say initially, wow, that's a lot of money to get involved right as I'm getting ready to sell my first franchise?
Well, that's a great question, and the answer in my view is, if you're investing in many cases your entire life savings or your entire being into a new venture, and how important is it that you do it correctly? So, and I don't think the investment is that much, especially for a startup. Is it worth spending a few dollars to enable you to be shoulder to shoulder with people who have done this already and get the benefit of their experience, learn from the mistakes that they have made so that you don't make those same mistakes, which would in the end cost you a whole lot more than what it will cost you to be part of IFA?
I don't think you can
measure in terms of dollars the value of being able to sit in the same room with some of the icons of franchising and people who have been so successful in developing their own businesses.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's I think we can lead right into that MasterCard commercial and get to the point of saying IFA membership priceless.
Absolutely.
I truly believe it's invaluable. You know, as many as probably all within franchising know some of your background. You are a franchisee, a multi-unit franchisee, quite successful at it, but you're also the former IFA chairman, now, of course, a member of the IFA Hall of Fame, and as I said, the first franchisee to be awarded that. And you're the first franchisee to receive the CFE designation. And yet there are a lot of franchisees, the majority of franchisees, that are not involved in the IFA. And I guess my question is, you know, what are your thoughts about franchisees joining and being active themselves in the IFA?
Well, here again, you've got franchisees, just like franchisors, at all different levels. And so you have single unit operators who perhaps are challenged by time and the ability to spend time away from their businesses, because when they leave, there may not be anybody else there to run the business. And then you have multi-unit franchisees at all levels. The importance of participating is the same as I believe it is to franchisors, and that is, I mean, it's multi-folded here. You've got the public policy issues. And we have a great franchisee program in the fall, our public affairs conference, that is heavily attended by franchisees. And that's an opportunity, of course, to speak to your members of Congress and express your views on on the issues they're dealing with. And my view there is, if we don't go give our opinion and try to persuade our members to pass legislation that's beneficial to us as not just the franchise industry but small businesses, then somebody else will. And that somebody else may have a totally different opinion of the way things need to be. So it's critically, you know, I never had any contact with my member of Congress until I went to my first public affairs conference. And I've not missed one since, because I've realized how important it is. On the other, another front is the educational value and what you can gain from participating in these events that IFA sponsors, the learning ability, the types of educational programs that are provided, and as I said earlier, the ability to sit in the room with other people who are your peers and who can be your mentors, is invaluable, and it's well worth the time spent and the money spent.
It really is invaluable, and you brought up a good point about, you know, speaking to your local representatives. I know back in 91 or 92, one of my first involvement with the IFA was actually with Steve Hammerstein heading up the Coalition for Responsible Franchising, along with Joyce Mazzaro and some other very well-known names in franchising. And it was right here in Texas that some law was on the table, and we kept trekking back and forth to Austin. And it was the first time that I myself got to speak with my local representatives, and have been quite active since. And to all the franchisees and franchisors that are out there that have yet to get involved in these type of activities, they're very self-satisfying when you accomplish your objective. But more importantly, it really is a great time to meet other franchise professionals with like mind, like objectives, and like thoughts. And the experience and the insight that you gain from them, just in a lot of the sessions that you get together to talk about the actual political issues, really is a tremendous opportunity, and ones that I highly recommend that you get involved with. And as Doc said, you know, you can get involved in September, trek down to Washington. I know there's a lot of people, and I hope to be there this September, and that will be my first one actually in Washington, where I've done more on the local level. You know, before I move on, Doc, I do want to give some credit because I keep, talking about you being the first this and the first that, and I know I was mistaken when I had referred to you in some of our notes and communications going back and forth that you were the first franchisee to be chairman of the IFA, and you so aptly corrected me that you were actually the second, and the first was Steve Siegel. Is that correct?
That is correct. Steve was, of course, one of the first franchisee members of IFA. He was part of that very small but active group back in 1993 that started things going, and he laid the groundwork for franchisees when he got nominated to be the chairman, and he was a great chairman.
When did you first get involved in the IFA?
I was in that early group. I did not make the first meeting, or maybe the first two meetings. I can't remember. But I was back there in 1993 with that first group that was led by Regina Gardner, who was the first chairman of what we called then the IFA Franchise Advisory Council that has since transitioned into the franchisee forum. So it's been 18 years.
Wow.
Seems like yesterday.
How has how has the IFA and franchising changed since you first got involved in the IFA? And was that right at the time that you first became a franchisee, or did you become a franchisee before that?
No, I'd been a franchisee since 1978, actually, so for quite some time. And what happened was that Arthur Karp, who was one of the founders of Great American Cookies and a past chairman of the IFA, was on the board at the time. And when they made that momentous decision to allow franchisees to participate, he asked me to represent Great American with that first franchisee advisory council. So that's how I got involved. It was quite different back then. I think franchising has changed a tremendous amount in these past 18 years, and I attribute a good bit of it to IFA's efforts to work toward best practices in franchise relations. That was, for me, was the motivation to get involved, was the fact that the franchise relationship we had at Great American was not very good. And by getting involved with IFA, I learned that it didn't have to be that way. And so I took what I learned from other people at IFA, other franchisees in that first group, and subsequent groups, and what I learned from franchisors that I got to know back then, 18, 17 years ago, and came back to Great American Cookies and said, guys, we need to focus on how we work together to get better. And that's what happened. And I think we transitioned at Great American from perhaps as bad a relationship situation as you could have into as good a relationship situation as you could have. We went, to quote a phrase, from worst to best, or from last to first, whichever way you want to call it, but I give complete credit to IFA for that, because that's where I learned how it could be and how it should be.
What was that first meeting like at the IFA, as you said, back in 1993?
For me, it was a little bit embarrassing. Number one, I came in with a bit of a chip on my shoulder because, you know, I thought, and I don't know if I've ever admitted this, they may take the award back from me if I say this, but what I used to believe was that the IFA was a group of franchisors who met in smoke-filled rooms trying to figure out how to control franchisees. And at that first meeting, I remember making a comment because we were talking about the franchise agreement. And our franchise agreement back then was what I considered quite onerous. And I said in this meeting, there were probably 30, 35 people sitting there. I said, well, you know, how can you guys approve a license agreement that's as onerous as the one I have to sign? Because I always assumed that IFA approved all those things. Everybody looked at me like I was some sort of an idiot and said, wait, what are you talking about? We don't approve or look at franchise agreements. And so it was an awakening that, well, wait a minute, my impression of what this group is wrong. And so for me, that first meeting was an eye-opening experience, because it defined for me what IFA was about, which was protecting franchising and improving all areas of franchising, not just a relationship. As I later learned, it was about improving many, many areas of franchising.
Right, and you know, a lot of people today have the same impression that the IFA is there to enforce, they're there to monitor, they're there to approve, and until they actually get involved, they realize that that's not the case. And certainly, it does have tremendous value. And
I think the key. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think the key is that what IFA has done over the years is to provide best practices. And
absolutely,
that really is what IFA is all about, is best practices.
Sure. There's no doubt. And if any listeners have yet to attend an IFA conference or convention, you're really missing out, because especially this past one in Las Vegas, I think, was the best one yet, and I see a lot of light at the end of the tunnel, and I think they'll get better, especially as the economy continues to rebound. You know, going back to the 70s, Doc, you know, what actually prompted you to become a franchisee, and take us through a quick journey, if you would, on how you got from franchisee to a Hall of Famer?
How many hours do we have? Let me see if I can give you the condensed version. Back in 1978, I found myself to be a victim, an early victim, of corporate downsizing, except back then we just called it getting fired. And so here I was, vice president of a chain of drugstores in California, and came into the office one day and found out I had no job. The company was in trouble. They eliminated the entire vice president level of the company, and they were nice enough to let me keep my company car so I could get home that day, but I had no job and no car, and so I had to scramble to find out what the heck to do. And it was actually my sister who saw this cookie concept start up in Atlanta. It took me several months to believe that anybody could make money selling chocolate chip cookies, especially in a mall where the rents were significant. But I finally went and visited, decided it was for me, and planned on opening my first store out in California. And that's another part of the story, is that here I spend 3 or 4 or 5 months looking for and obtaining a location in a new mall that was being built in Mission Viejo, which was 15 minutes from my home, and fly to Atlanta to sign my franchise agreement, and find out at the signing, at the table in the attorney's office, that, oops, we've made a mistake. California, and this was before there was a federal disclosure rule. This was before the FTC disclosure requirements. But there were those, I think, 14 disclosure states, and California was one of them. And they said, oops, we can't sell you a franchise in California.
Wow.
So that was a shock, and I ended up in, of all places, Lafayette, Louisiana, which turned out to be, absolutely a grand slam home run location, and that's how I got into franchising.
Wow. That's California to Lafayette, Louisiana is a big difference, a big jump. Certainly at a time when malls were just gaining in popularity, which a lot of people didn't even know if they were going to be able to sustain or have some longevity. That's quite a story.
It was quite a culture shock, too, I can tell you that.
I bet, coming out of corporate. It definitely rings or resonates with a lot of today's franchise candidates, or at least interested parties, if you would, that are transitioning executives looking at franchising. I know we're even seeing a lot of entrepreneurs that have started their own businesses outside of franchising now looking at franchising as the for the first time. Where they might not have considered it before. So, you know, it definitely has a lot of similarities to back there in the 70s. And then, of course, over the years, you've progressed and you've developed to the point of being a multi-unit franchisee. And I know that's a challenge in itself. What are some of the challenges that – let me rephrase it. You know, what advice would you give to franchisees and successful franchisees who desire to become – multi-unit operators?
Well, I never imagined being a single-unit operator. It was always my intent to have more than one unit. I don't know whether I envisioned having 30, but I certainly envisioned having 15 or 20. I didn't know where I was going to get the money because I didn't have any, but nevertheless, I had big dreams. I think it depends on what your personal goals are. I mean, some people are happy to have a single unit and operate it and go to work every day and make the cookies and make a good living, and that's all that they aspire to do. In my case, I wanted to be able to have a multiple unit operation where I could expand the group, create some opportunities for folks who would come to work in our stores, grow the company to create additional responsibilities, and increase the value. I mean, that's sort of what entrepreneurs do. They take risk and build things, and that's what I wanted to do. There are certainly challenges there are different challenges of being a multi-unit operator than there are of being a single-unit operator.
You know, about 2 months ago, we had Dave Melton, multi-unit franchisee with Domino's, on the show, and he's written a book called Hire the American Dream. And he talks in the book and talked on the show about hiring, you know, minimum low-wage employees and have them work through the system and hopefully get to the point of being able to go into the business themselves as an operator. And he tells a tremendous success story, and I hear you basically saying the same things, and yet I don't hear a lot of multi-unit operators even mention about their employees getting to the point of being able to open their own stores. And I think that's kudos to you, kudos to Dave Melton and the other multi-unit operators that are out there that are realizing the value of human resources as well as helping them achieve their goals and objectives, which, of course, assists you in achieving your own. That's a lot of good foresight, and certainly to echo your term of best practices, certainly a best practice in franchising and one that should be heeded and followed by franchisees all across the country and internationally for that matter. And, you know, with multi-unit ownership, I know in my experience with multi-unit ownership, and of course mine was on the non-food service side, I was in the service industries, and I wound up with five locations that were quite large and quite demanding. and succeeded tremendously, and also, at first, shamefully to say, but I'm kind of neutral on it right now. You know, I almost failed catastrophically because it was so easy to take my eye off the ball and not really look at it from the perspective of the value of human resources. And so I'm real happy that you reinforced that message here today, Doc. I think that's a message that needs to resonate throughout franchising.
It's all about the people.
Yeah, it definitely is all about the people. You know, what's your, you know, I'll tell a little quick story because a year and a half ago, I was asked to present at the Women's Franchise Network in Houston, Texas, out at ICED's headquarters. That's the headquarter of Quick Copy and Computer Explorers, for those that don't know that. And Deb Evans, the CEO of Computer Explorers, heads up the Franchise Business Network now in Houston and the Women's Franchise Network. And it was a combined meeting, and I was asked to speak out there about social media. And, of course, a year and a half ago, that discussion was a lot simpler than it is today, although it was quite complex in the realm of people just sticking their toe in the water. And here you are, a franchisee since 1970-something and been involved for a long time and sitting right in the front with some of your personnel from the stores was you. And it told me right there that you had a very positive opinion as far as technology within franchising. And if you would, you know, please share with us, you know, some of your perspective on technology within franchising and, of course, with respect to business ownership today.
Well, when you mention technology, it's such a broad topic. So, I mean, if you break that down into computer technology that we use to run our business, it's vital today. You know, it used to be a store finished its daily paperwork, and they put it in an envelope and hand-wrote the address and put a stamp on it and mailed it to the home office. And 3 or 4 days later, we get it, and by the time we process it, it's a week old. Today, everything is instant. I want to see today's sales today. I want to be able to look at my computer screen and pull up any store and see where it is today. You know, what are our sales? What are our sales department ratios? What are we selling? What's our payroll? I want to be able to do that in real time. The other side of the technology is the social media. And in the social media area, we here haven't scratched the surface. We have one person in our office who's pretty proficient with it, and she's probably the only one in the office that, I mean, I have a Facebook page. I don't think I look at it more than once every 90 days. So we have one person in our office who is very good at social media, but she has so many other duties that it, you know, she can't devote full time to it. We have probably one person in our management team in the field that's fairly good at it. And what I see is we need ourselves to be much more involved in that area. I mean, that's where this generation is. I mean, the generation today is even moving away from email. They use Facebook and Twitter to communicate. I mean, I think email is high tech, and they look at me and laugh. Oh, I don't ever check my email anymore. So you don't check your email. What do you check? I check my Facebook page. Well, my goodness, how do I communicate on my Facebook page? So I would need somebody to show me how to. I mean, I think I could do it, but essentially I need somebody to show me, hey, this is what you do. And so I know that we need help from our franchisor in that area. I believe our franchisors, and a lot of franchisors are doing this. They're maintaining these social media sites and pages, and they're involving their franchisees down to the unit level in that. And you know, you have to really be on top of that stuff. You can't just give it lip service. You have to be really involved in it. Now, that's the way things are going, I think. The kids of today are going to be totally electronic with their communication.
Well, you know, I remember when video games, especially in the home, became all the rage, and people said, you know, I can't get my kid away from the TV screen. It seems like they're incest. They're, you know, just glued to the TV playing, you know, a video game. And yet the country as a whole saw the benefits of that wave of technology in our fighter pilots that have unbelievable eye-hand coordination. And I know there's an Army commercial, it's one of the armed forces, where it looks like a video game on the screen, and
yep.
And it looks like it's far-fetched, and yet the real message is we do this every day. And
yep, I've seen that.
Yeah, and I believe today, you know, social media, although a lot of people that think it's a fad, it's certainly not, because it is just another way of communicating, and it's going to continue to evolve. And if people aren't at least scratching the surface today, God only knows where they're going to be 2 years from now.
Well, I'll tell you, I remember when there was a difference between the Internet and surfing the Internet and going to the wide, wide web. And
mm-hmm.
today, of course, nobody talks about that. And I remember one of my first assignments at IFA, one of the first things they asked me to do. You remember Prodigy?
Yep.
Prodigy was one of the early
yep.
ISPs and competed with AOL, and I was on Prodigy. That's the one I used, and IFA asked me to lead a franchise bulletin board. You used to have board leaders back then,
mm-hmm.
and it was before blogs and all this other stuff, but there was a board. And I would sign in every day, and I would see who posted questions and try to answer them to the best of my ability. And so, boy, we've come a long way from that.
We sure have come a long way, but, you know, the basics, the fundamentals of it are not a lot different today than they were then. The technology certainly has improved.
Yep.
But whoever has started pushing in that direction realized that it is all about people. It is all about community. It is all about communicating. And I think it's great because, you know, going back to, you know, mentioning your first visit to an IFA convention and what you feel the benefits of being involved in the IFA is a lot along the same lines of people being involved in an online community. And within franchising, I think there are multiple benefits to be had. You know, both in, you know, generating interest in the franchise concept, driving business to the unit level, to the franchisees, and one that never gets talked about, which is improving communications throughout the entire franchise organization. And I think it's a wonderful setting, especially as today's franchise candidates and consumers are certainly, as you said, this generation, and those are our customers and franchise candidates today and tomorrow. They're certainly more educated, sophisticated, and technologically advanced than we've ever seen before. And then, of course, in any of the processes that they make, whether it be, you know, buying a franchise or whether it be, you know, just frequenting a business, they have access to so much information that oftentimes they have learned more about the company than the people in the company themselves. It is a remarkable time.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of the things that has changed the most in the 30-some years that I've been doing this, and that is the nature of the franchisee candidate today is so much different than it was when I was a franchisee candidate. I didn't have the resources or the ability to do the research. I thought I was pretty sophisticated. I was vice president of a fairly good sized company, but boy, I didn't know half of what I needed to know. And today's franchisee applicant, I think, is much, much more sophisticated, much more likely to have a legal and financial advice from professionals. And I think the whole nature of franchising has changed dramatically. Today, the way we work with and interact with our franchisors today is totally different than it was 30 years ago. We are deeply involved in the decision-making process with all of our franchisors. There is so much more communication back and forth and involvement in the day-to-day decisions. Now, you know, the franchisor, of course, always has the last word, and it's their responsibility to protect the brand. But today, it is a much more collaborative effort than it was 30 years ago. I find myself and my fellow franchisees involved at every level of every aspect of our business with our franchisor.
Well, it truly has evolved into an interdependent type of relationship. I know a lot of early complaints from franchisees were that, you know, the franchisor were treating them like employees.
Let's not go there.
you know that all too well. But I think, you know, I think there's two sides of that, you know, kind of reflecting back. You had, you know, entrepreneurs that started franchise organizations. They felt this is their baby, this is their brand, and by God, I'm going to protect it. But then it was also the other side, because this franchise relationship, which at times can be quite complex and complicated, a lot of them just didn't know how to properly handle that relationship. And I think that in itself took some time as well. And I think with best practices, you know, you listen to Greg Nathan talk at the IFA and his franchise relations boot camp and stuff, and he talks about relationships, you know, in franchising certainly weren't even thought of 30 years ago.
Yeah, I think some of that comes from, and look, as the founder of my own company here, I went through it on a different level perhaps, but when you start something, I mean, it's funny, I'll go into one of our stores with our vice president, who has been with me since the second day I've been in business and is now a partner in the business, and we'll go into a store together, and I'll say, why are they doing that? And he'll say, well, that's the way we do it. I said, no, that's not the way we do it. We do it this way. He'll look at me and he'll say, Doc, this is the way we do it. We've always done it that way. I said, we've never done it that way. And, you know, it's just things have changed. And so, but I was defensive because, here, I started this and I developed this procedure and now it's changed. And I don't like that you changed what I decided to do. But then I have to step back and look at it and say, you know what, it's changed, but it's better. And that ties right in, that ties back. All these things tie in together. So that ties back into the importance of people. So the communication level within our own franchisee company is similar to the relationship and involvement we have as franchisees with our franchisor. We bring people in and have them be part of our team for what they can bring to the table in terms of their thought process and what they contribute to the evolution of our own business. You know, I could get anybody to go in and bake cookies. What I want is people to go in and bake cookies and call us and say, you know what, this is the way we're doing it now, but if we did this, this would improve how we do this by this much. I want their thinking. I want their heads in the game. And that's the way it is today, much more today with franchisors. And, yes, founders of companies tend to be protective and resistant to change. And we saw that at Great American. But through my involvement with IFA, when I went back to Great American and talked to the two founders and said, guys, look, I understand. We're not trying to threaten you as the owners. We're not a threat. We want to be part of the evolution of the company, and we think we have something to contribute. And once that message was clear, we took that company to a whole new level. I mean, we started to get participation from franchisees, most of whom were very intelligent, hard-working, entrepreneurial-type people, and they had great ideas. And we brought all those ideas together with our franchisor, and together we worked out a system that got better and better and better. And that's how we are. That's why we are where we are today.
Well, if you were given a crystal ball to look into the future for franchising, what do you think you would see?
I see tremendous growth and opportunity. I think people are coming up with new ways to franchise businesses. I think I see a generation that recognizes the value of being part of a proven system. The ability to find a business where many, if not most, of the mistakes have already been made and corrected. So you've got something, you've got a book. Here's a book. This is how we do it here. If you follow the book, your chances to succeed are good. And if you don't follow the book and don't want to follow the book, then go open Doc's Cookies. But if you want to be part of Great American, look at the book and follow the book. If you think you can improve the book, fine, we'll do that together. But if you look at today, we have, for instance, just one of the programs, we have VetFriend. We have veterans coming out of military service who have served their country and come back and need to start supporting themselves outside of the military. What better way to do that than to get into a franchise business? Here's somebody that can take you from a totally different way of life and say, look, here you are. Here's a concept that works. Here's a cookie concept or a coffee concept, a pretzel concept. Here's how this works. Do you think you'd enjoy doing it? Well, yeah, I think I'd really like being a franchisee, a coffee beanery, or Great American Cookies. Okay, here's how we do it here. You still think you'd like to do it? Well, yeah, I would. All right, now we're going to help you get there. And I think more and more and more people are looking at franchising as a way of doing business. It's a wonderful business format because you've got all the support, not only from your franchisor, but also from your fellow franchisees. We exchange ideas all the time amongst our franchisee group. We help you. Look, I can tell you, people that I mentored when they first came into our system have become mentors to me because they've learned and are willing to share back with me what they've learned, and it's made us all better. Franchising is still, in my view, one of the most promising ways and formats of doing business that's out there.
I agree. I think it's a fabulous business model, great people, great way to learn, great way to grow a business, tremendous support systems, and definitely going to continue to grow. I firmly believe that it's the cornerstone of small business today. Needs to be looked at that way, I think, a little bit more by the people up on Capitol Hill, as well as we need to continue to tell the story about franchising and shed the good light on it where necessary. And then, of course, if there's a bad light, we need to address it, and we need to take care of our own house, which basically was some of your initial comments with the formation of the IFA back when. And I think we're on the right track.
I agree. I think we are.
You know, what's in it for Doc in the future? What new plans does Doc Cohen have moving forward?
Well, I keep thinking, when am I going to slow down? But the fact is that just last week I went and looked at a new concept. It's not a new concept. It would be new for me. A different franchise outside of the food business. So we're looking at perhaps starting up a whole new area of development. So I don't know. I'm going to keep doing it as long as I'm able to do it. I enjoy it. I love coming to work every day. I love the fact that we produce a product that people want, like, and enjoy. I keep wanting to work with my various franchisors to improve the concepts themselves. At this point in my life, it's about giving back. And
mm-hmm.
I mentioned that when I spoke at IFA is the importance of giving back. There were people in my retail life who were mentors to me and helped me achieve the success I did when I was in the retail business. When I got in the cookie business, there wasn't anyone to mentor me, and I ended up having to take the responsibility for those who followed me to share what I learned and try to mentor them the best way that I could. And so, and that's one of the nice things about being a multi-unit operator and getting to a point where you have a great staff that essentially runs the company, because that frees me up to have the time to participate at IFA, answer phone calls, visit other people who need help and say, look, I'm happy to come visit your stores and see what I see. That's very rewarding. And, I hope I can continue to do that as time moves on.
Well, Doc, you certainly have. You're a testament to what franchising should be about. And like you said, it's nice having the team in place, and so you can go do other things, but that's also a credit to you for investing in your people and investing in processes and procedures that it can work without you being there every day. And so I think it's a result of all the effort and time that you've put into it over the years. You know, for one of the first times, and it might be the first time, considering you're the first franchisee as an IFA Hall of Famer and certainly bring a lot to the IFA. We have Jack Earl as a multi-unit franchisee himself as the chairman. We have Steve Caldera, who has franchising experience, which has been, I think, a while since the CEO and president had actual practical franchise experience. Boy, I tell you, there's a lot of practical experience at the top of the IFA, and I think that's just going to add to the future indeed.
We have a fantastic leadership team at IFA and a fantastic professional staff in Washington, and that combination is a great formula for success. I'm so excited about the future of IFA, of franchising in general, and I'm so thrilled and privileged to be a part of it.
Well, if anybody hasn't had the opportunity to meet Doc, I highly recommend you do so. He's full of wisdom and is always willing to share it. You'll see him at just about every IFA event that I've been to. I've seen him, so I think he's at all of them. And, Doc, you know, when I first invited you to be a guest on Franchise Today and outlined topics that we could discuss, just like you said earlier, you know, so is this just a four-hour show? Well, we did discuss a great deal in an hour, and I know I could talk to you for hours on end, but we are limited to an hour on Franchise Today, and it's really unbelievable how fast an hour flies by on Franchise Today, and I really do appreciate and thank you for being my guest, and I look forward to you coming back sometime in the future if you would do so.
Well, it was my great pleasure to be here, and I hope you'll invite me back. I would be happy to come back.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again for being my guest. And remember, everybody, next Thursday, my guest is IFA Chairman Jack Earl. The following week will be the rebroadcast of my interview with Steve Caldera. So that's all leading up into the IFE Expo in Washington on April 1st through the 3rd. And remember to mark your calendars April 14th through the 26th, through May 26th for the Franchise Legal Series on Franchise Today. And if you are looking at your calendar, you realize I left out April 7th. No, the April 7th show will be my guest, will be Rhonda Sanderson. And if everybody in franchising knows, Rhonda is a great person to talk to. And she's going to help me and Joe Caruso give a recap of the IFE. So there really are great times ahead for franchising and Franchise Today. So until then, I'm Paul Segretto wishing you the best in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.